Good morning, good morning. As the note in the note in the bulletin, I talked about our busy week to end the summer. It's no joke. Yesterday, as I said, we're trying to take care of the things the boys said they wanted to do this summer. Yesterday we went to a museum, a zoo, and a Lansing Lugnuts game. We're playing catch up here at the end. Did find out, as you know, our boys can be quirky. From observing Jared yesterday, you find out peacocks wandering around a zoo, scary. 7 foot tall mascot, looks like a dragon with hardware on its face. He wants to go hug it and get his picture taken with it. I'm not sure how this works. We're still learning. This morning, I want to try something out. I borrow the saying from the Mythbusters where failure is always an option. We'll see what happens. This is the first in what I view as an occasional series that I'm calling Why I Like the Old Testament. I've told you I'm an Old Testament guy. We've tried to do some classes from the Old Testament with varying results. I thought it might be useful, partly as just more of sharing who I am with you, and partly as seeing what just what we might find of value to share together, to share some things about just why I call myself an Old Testament guy and why I find this part of the Bible so fascinating. The goal is not to criticize the way anybody else reads Scripture. This isn't going to be and here's why somebody reads this wrong and you should read it this way. The goal is just to share what I find special and maybe find out we might have some things in common in that way. So this morning, I want to talk about the first on this list of why I like the Old Testament. And the first reason that I like the Old Testament is because of how much the New Testament likes the Old Testament. The New Testament writers love the Old Testament. They assume that anybody reading any of the New Testament books love and know the Old Testament too. They assume that somebody reading their writings have a lot of background and a lot of knowledge in the Old Testament. After all, they weren't writing a new story. They were continuing one that had started a long time ago. They were working with figures and ideas that they assumed were so ingrained in their audience that they don't need to back up and explain them. This is something you know. Let's talk about that and jump from there. It kind of reminds me of another story from long ago in a galaxy far, far away. The most recent Star Wars movie that came out, The Force Awakens. Now, among Star Wars fans, and I don't know how many of those are here, how many nerds are here. Got Dan in the back, all right. Now, there are some people that argue, if you're going to start watching Star Wars, do you start with the original trilogy, or do you start with the prequel trilogy? You know, do you go chronologically, or do you go in the release? Guy, you've heard this argument. And people are very passionate either direction. But one thing that everybody agrees on, you don't start with the most recent one that came out. Episode 7, The Force Awakens. You don't start with that. Because that movie was written assuming a lot of background knowledge. Like, here is the opening scroll. You know, the music, it swells. I'm not going to sing it. I've fixed it so it's not slanted, so it's a little easier to read. But think about if you didn't know anything about previous Star Wars movies. Hopefully everybody's got a little bit of knowledge here. Some of the things that are introduced in this opening scroll that are not explained one bit. So it starts off, Luke Skywalker has vanished. Who? It's not going to tell you. You should know if you're watching this movie. If you don't know that, hit pause, put in another one, right? And it talks about the Republic and Leia and the Resistance and all of these things that is just assuming you know these things. It is using familiar characters, familiar situations, and saying, since we all know these things, let's move on to the continuation of this story. That's the way the New Testament writers thought about the material in the Old Testament. Very rarely did they slow down to explain this stuff that happened before. They talk about Abraham, Moses, Rahab, Melchizedek, Lot, all of these characters, all of these events in the Old Testament that you just should know. In fact, we mentioned Melchizedek in the Sunday morning class. The last few weeks we've been looking in Hebrews, where it's kind of rare that it does slow down to say, oh wait, you may not understand this. Let me back up and explain who Melchizedek is. That's unusual. Normally it says, here's a figure from the Old Testament. Here's an event. You know this. Now let's move on from there. And they weren't just drawing from familiar names and stories. It's not just using them as examples. They're showing how the events of the New Testament and how the life of Jesus were continuing the work of God found in the Old Testament. It's a story that begins in Genesis, and it's a story that's about God's desire for relationship with humans. And it unfolds and twists and turns from creation to flood, covenant, to law and kings, prophets, exile, return, Messiah. All of these ways, all of these parts are trying to show how God is trying to reach his people and show his love to his people. And when Jesus appears on the scene in the Gospels, it's not some new story. It's saying this is a continuation of that same story about God's desire for his people, about God trying to show his love to his people. So I titled this lesson, The Family Business, because when you look at the New Testament, it's clear to see that when we talk about God the Father and Jesus the Son is joining the family business and continuing its work, not taking over the family business. God does not retire when Jesus shows up on the scene. I mean, take it from the man himself. The God himself. Fully human. Take it from Jesus himself. Sorry, that came up. That seemed a lot more clever when I thought of it earlier. Jesus, in John 5, says, So because Jesus was doing these things on the Sabbath, the Jewish leaders began to persecute him. In his defense, Jesus said to them, my Father is always at work to this very day, and I am working too. For this reason, they tried all the more to kill him. Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. And Jesus gave them this answer, very truly I tell you, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can only do what he sees his Father doing. because whatever the Father does, the Son also does. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all he does. Yes, he will show him even greater works than these, so that you will be amazed. Jesus says, I am doing what the Father has been doing. I can only do what I've seen God doing. And he says it in a slightly different way in John chapter 7. Jesus had been teaching, and the Jews there were amazed and asked, how did this man get such learning without having been taught? And Jesus answered, my teaching is not my own. It comes from the one who sent me. Anyone who chooses to do the will of God will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. Whoever speaks on their own does so to gain personal glory. But he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is a man of truth. There's nothing false about him. He says, he's not teaching anything new. Just like when the prophets came along and said they're not teaching something new, they're reminding the people of the Torah, reminding people of the things God said. Jesus comes along and says, I'm not making something up new. I am doing the will and teaching the words of the one who sent me. This is part of the same story. And toward the end, when Jesus was praying for his people, it is at the end of that long section of red text in John that we call the farewell discourse. And when Jesus is praying, he says to God, I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you loved me. Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. So this is a message. I do have more on that. Righteous Father, though the world does not know you, I know you. And they know that you have sent me. I have made you known to them and will continue to make you known in order that the love you have for me may be in them and that I myself may be in them. This is a ministry that they are sharing. Jesus does not take over this ministry from God. He shares in it. When Jesus says that if you've seen him, you've seen the Father, he's not saying that if you have Jesus, you don't need the Father. He's saying they are one in their mission. And I suppose this could be Jesus being humble. But the other New Testament writers pick up this same idea about how God is not done working even in the Christian age. I'll show you something pretty cool I found. Is anybody familiar with word clouds? You take a text and it examines the words in there and puts it together in a visual picture to show you what is most important in the text, or at least most talked about. So this is a word cloud, to use as an example, a word cloud from the Declaration of Independence. So it figures all the words in there, and the bigger a word is, the more times it's used in that text. So what are the things that are most important in the Declaration of Independence? Well, we have the people, we have laws, government, right, states, powers. And some of the words you may not be able to read very well. Well, that kind of works for this kind of setup. You see the things that are most important, and the stuff that are less important aren't as plain. Somebody told me, it was a teacher that I had, about what the most frequently used word in the book of Romans was. And I never had a way of double-checking him on it. until I thought of doing this. I didn't feel like doing the work of tallying things up. And I found a word cloud of the book of Romans. And of course, that's where Paul in most detail lays out his theology of who Jesus is and what Jesus has done and what it means to be Christian. Here's the word cloud on the book of Romans. The most frequent word in the book is God. Christ is very big there, a little bit bigger than gods with the possessive. You see Jesus at the bottom there is a major word. Again, this doesn't necessarily talk about importance, but it says this is what the author is talking about. And I looked into a little more, and it's not just Romans. Here's 1 and 2 Corinthians. I don't know if it's big enough you can see the labels at the bottom of the books. God's the biggest word there. And it's not just a Paul thing. Here's 1 Peter and Hebrews. 1 John and Revelation. The New Testament shows over and over and over that the work of Christ is the work of God. The God who James says does not change. The God who Revelation says was and is to come. The God who has not retired. The God who continues to seek after his people. And the New Testament says that if you want to know what the church is supposed to be about, you need to know what God has been doing with his people since the beginning. And if you want to know who Jesus is, you would be wise to get to better know who God is. And I don't think that's anything shocking. I don't think that's anything scandalous. How many of you would like to know God better? Good. And how do we know God better? There are a lot of ways. I would suggest that a valuable and important way is to look at the writings in the Old Testament. Because like we said, the New Testament writers assume you know a lot. And throughout the Old Testament, it is the writings of a community that is seeking to understand God, that is trying to express the identity, the character, the personality of this God whose name they bear as the people of God. And the church, we are the people of Christ. We are also the people of God. And we would be wise to learn from the Old Testament community, who may not be in the same place where we stand, who may not have the full revelation of Christ that we are blessed to have, but they spent centuries asking and answering questions about who is this God? Yahweh, Jehovah, the Lord, whatever name you put in the text there, they're trying to sort out what does it mean to be the people of God? What do the people of God do? You can't just have the Old Testament. I'm never going to make that statement. When I say Old Testament guy, never think that's what I'm saying. But there is so much value in spending some time sitting down with the people of this Old Testament community. The New Testament writers, all but one of them, were Jewish. They thought of themselves as being part of a proud community that went all the way back to the beginning, that called themselves the people of God. They saw themselves as part of something bigger. And they said when Jesus comes on the scene, it gets even bigger than that. And that is the gospel story. And we don't have to pretend to be Old Testament Jews to learn from them. But church, if we want to get to know God better, if we want that closer relationship, and I know we do, we need to be using that resource. And we need to sometimes be careful that we don't always have our Christology goggles on. You know, sometimes when we go to the Old Testament, we say, hey, let's find Jesus in here. And there are times that's appropriate. But we can also learn from this community who knows God so intimately. We can learn to have that intimacy as well. Think of it this way. If somebody got up to preach a lesson or give a class or just talk about the ways to better know God and gave a very valuable lesson about who God is and how to understand God, would you look at them and say, okay, but what does that have to do with Jesus? I don't think we do. We can understand that we can learn from our brothers and sisters about who God is, and we can focus on the importance of having that relationship with God without having to circle it back around to Jesus. But I feel sometimes when we go to the Old Testament, if we can't find Jesus, we say, well, that's not what it's about. I think sometimes we miss the point that way. Long story short, I hope this has been valuable. I hope you can see where I'm coming from. I hope I've not said anything that's problematic. Because what I'm trying to say is in the Old Testament we find our God. The God that has been working from the beginning, seeking a relationship with us. Our God who in pursuit of that goal sent his Son so that we might call ourselves Christian, people of Christ, as well as the people of God. And I love that. That's one of the things that makes me so appreciative to have the material in the Old Testament. And so I hope that together, as a church, we can seek after God just as fervently as we seek after Christ when we're in the New Testament. In that pursuit this morning, if you are needing prayers, if you're needing support, we want to know about it. In that pursuit, if you say, I know that part of the story of God seeking his people involves baptism, involves that salvation that comes through there, if there's anything we can do with that this morning, we want to hear about that too. If there's anything we do this morning, please let us know as we stand and sing.